Support for WPR comes from Stone Harbor, a Door County resort and conference center overlooking the historic Steel Bridge in Sturgeon Bay. Details about hosting a wedding or conference are at stoneharbor-resort.com.
Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, committed to being an objective partner for over 425 employers and their brokers, providing self-funded employers with data to manage their health plans. The-Alliance.org.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, veteran suicides have gone up in recent years. A Wisconsin organization has a unique approach to suicide prevention.
But first, stories of people our next guest calls the heroically frugal have been making the rounds during the Great Recession and its aftermath. People like Canada's Sean Cooper, who paid off a $250,000 mortgage by eating Kraft mac and cheese for dinner and living in the basement of his own home, used to generate positive responses, but that may be changing.
Our next guest says that the narrative that our financial woes are no one's fault but our own may be shifting. As housing prices climb, the economy works to recover lost ground. Maybe, she says, people are realizing there's only so much that budgeting can accomplish.
Helene Olin joins us now. She's a columnist for Slate and the author of Pound Foolish, co-author of The Index Card. Helene, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Well, can you start by telling us the story of Sean Cooper? This is a Canadian guy who paid off that $255,000 mortgage in 3 years.
Yes, I can. This is a fantastic story. Sean Cooper, who is, among other things, a personal finance blogger, bought a house a few years ago in a suburb of Toronto, or in the Toronto suburbs, I should say, and he decided he did not want to keep a mortgage, in part because his mother had almost lost the family home when he was a child. And so he basically devoted his life for several years to paying down that mortgage and did it successfully. But when I say devoted his life to it, I mean he did three jobs, worked 90 hours a week, and paid off this mortgage. And then he decided to invite the CBC to film him burning his mortgage papers, you know, the traditional thing people used to do, right, when they paid off their mortgage. And everybody apparently thought this would be a great feel-good story. What nobody counted on was what happened next, which is the fact that a lot of Canadians didn't think this was a particularly feel-good story. They thought they were being hectored, and they were being told that they should emulate Sean Cooper and work 90 hours a week. And people began writing in comments to the CBC along the lines of, you know, they have labor laws for this reason. Didn't you know that? And so on.
So this sounds like a shift, right? Because this is the kind of story, it seems like, that during the Great Recession, when belt tightening especially was really big, people were going on their own personal austerity, budget, dietary sort of thing. It seemed like this is what people wanted to hear. We got into this mess. We have to get out of it ourselves. So what's the shift here?
Well, I think the shift is a couple of things. As I like to say, in a lot of ways, this stuff is catnip during a recession, right? You give people the means to control the situation. The personal finance guru Dave Ramsey once said, you can choose not to participate in a recession, right? So you have this idea that people are frittering away their money on little things, the so-called latte factor, right? And, you know, if you can stop it, you will be okay. The shift is that people begin to realize at a certain point that that is not really the case, that these are greater economic forces pounding away at them. In Canada, for instance, like in many cities here, Toronto is experiencing a huge real estate run-up. People are finding the homes increasingly unaffordable. They also had recently come out of a recession, and people were pretty furious. Their savings rates have fallen as well. And I should say, this happened during the Great Depression here in the United States as well.
Right. You write about the thrift movement throughout history. Where did that idea of being thrifty, being such a virtue, come from?
Well, I mean, we've always, you know, people always admire thrift, right? But the idea of thrift really blew up during the First Gilded Age, if you consider our age the Second Gilded Age. And people would lecture at immigrants, thinking they were living in tenements, not because they were poor, but because they didn't know how to manage money. So they would offer them money management classes at settlement houses, and so on. People published books on thrift. And what eventually happened is this crash lands into the Great Depression. And the entire thrift movement essentially winds down over a couple of years, with one person who was huge in it actually claiming there was no use talking thrift to people who had nothing to be thrifty with.
Do you think that we're in a comparable thrift moment here in the United States, and are we possibly moving out of it?
Well, I should emphasize, Sean Cooper is Canadian, right? But it is possible. I mean, we are seeing signs, right? There is the Fight for 15 movement, which is increasingly gaining steam, this recognition that people are having financial issues, not because they can't budget properly, but because the minimum wage has failed to keep up with where it was relative to inflation in the 1970s. You're also seeing pushback. There was a survey that came out this past week from a market research group, I believe in New York, America's research group, that said 20% of shoppers simply can't afford to shop, which is astonishing when you think about that.
Well, in the meantime, there has been in our country, there's been this big appetite to hear from people like Suze Orman and Dave Ramsey about how they can get control of their financial lives. Do you have any sense that maybe people are getting impatient with that message?
I think they are getting impatient with that message. A few years ago, I did a piece on Dave Ramsey's attitude towards bankruptcy, which, as you might or might not know, he's very anti-bankruptcy, despite the fact that he himself filed for it at one point in his life. And I went to the webpage on his own website, and he wrote in about why you should consider bankruptcy only as a real last resort and how this is a really hard thing and, you know, really you should be paying down your bills. And people literally wrote into the website about how bankruptcy had made their lives better and that, you know, they had just given up on paying down bills that they could not afford to pay. And keep in mind, the main reason for bankruptcy in this country is health care costs. It's not people overspending at Starbucks.
So do you think in this country and in Canada, as we were talking about, people are shifting to look at some of these bigger systemic things, things like income inequality, housing costs, the economy, which is still slowly sputtering back to life? Are people looking at that instead of kind of kicking themselves around the block?
I think people are doing both, I think, is the answer. You know, a lot of these things aren't either or. I think there is a sense that people, an increasing sense among many people, that no matter how virtuous they are, no matter how good they are with money, they're not going to be able to keep up. And in some ways, this is a correct take on their part. Median household income adjusted for inflation is down still 7% from 2000. At the same time, as we all know, the cost of housing, health care, and education has gone up at rates well above inflation now for many years. To take one particular example that always leaps out at me, if you have employer-provided health insurance, that is, you know, you get health insurance through your employer, your out-of-pocket costs have gone up by over 50% since 2010, which is an extraordinary number that should actually get a lot more attention from people.
And we've got this presidential election year. You know, we're in the midst of this right now. How big a deal do you think all of these financial factors, you've mentioned the Fight for 15, that's the minimum wage movement, income inequality. How big a deal do you think issues like that are going to be in the presidential election?
Well, it seems like they've turned into a rather big deal at this point. Think about just last week, Hillary Clinton came out and said that she supported free in-state college tuition for students coming from households with incomes of less than $125,000 annually. And that's likely in part because of the huge millennial support for Bernie Sanders, who, as we all know, campaigned on a promise to try to make public college free for all students. And that's because the cost of college, again, is surging at rates beyond inflation over the entire period since the Great Recession.
If you look back through the lens of history and you see where we are with all of the economic issues that you just outlined there, do you see any corollaries from the past that might tell us where we're going to be headed next?
I try not to predict the future. but what I would say is it does seem that hard economic times seem to ultimately result in people attempting to push forward and realize when they realize, as I think I put it in this article, that they've kind of been had to an extent, right? That they're not going to save their way out of this, and they need the help of the greater economy and the greater society to get through.
And Helene, we started with the story of the Canadian man who paid down his mortgage in 3 years, you know, through extreme measures. And you recently spoke in Canada. What did people there have to say about this piece? Because I know this was a big piece of reporting that you did, especially in Canada. What did people tell you?
Well, you see both sides of it, right? I mean, some people really do admire what he did, and it was a real achievement. I should say that, right? I do believe it was a real achievement doing that. But a lot of other people just seem to be fairly annoyed that this was presented to them as some sort of model for how they should financially live, that this, you know, extreme sacrifice would A, work, and B, pay off. As many pointed out, he doesn't have Sean Cooper is a lovely person, but he's in his 20s. He doesn't have children. He's not married. So in one way, it's rather easy for him to go work 90 hours a week and put all his money towards his mortgage. He doesn't have a family to support. And people were very open about saying that.
Now, when you look at how all of these issues might play out in this country, what are the flashpoints as you look ahead this year and during the presidential race?
I think the flashpoints are people's salaries have simply not kept up with their greater expenses, that child care is a huge and enormous expense for many families, that health care continues to be a huge and enormous expense for many families, that the cost of higher education continues to be a huge and growing expense for many families, and that housing is, in many areas of the country, extremely expensive, that rents have surged in the wake of the Great Recession. It's just not just housing prices. And that these are all putting enormous strains on households, and that people want help. They want the problems solved, and they expect politicians to deal with it.
Helene, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Helene Olin, columnist for Slate and the author of Pound Foolish. She's also currently the host of the podcast, The United States of Debt. Mm-hmm.